here is the situation, folks. We have a very, very special episode for you today. We have the producer himself. And to introduce him, I'm going to throw it to you, Kate.
Byron Kent Wong, as a strategic creative director and media producer, Byron has over 3 decades of creative development experience in broadcast, music, design, film, event, and strategy. He is the founder and lead of the Emmy-nominated production ecosystem 0110, where I also happen to work for any of our listeners. Over his career, Byron has produced television series, feature films, immersive installations, and documentaries, and worked with rock stars, athletes, renowned community groups, and creatives from around the world, including collaborations and projects with HBO, Netflix, Michelle Obama, David Bowie, and many more. Notable documentary works include the Emmy-nominated Jason Day Never Say Never, Choir, 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 Hallelujah with Rufus Wainwright, Disruptor Conductor, and the beautiful film With Wonder, and has worked on projects with the Downey Wenjack Fund and renowned Toronto LGBTQ Community Center at the 519. He is accomplished, incredible, generous, and it was a joy. It will be a joy to speak with him.
But maybe mention what he's most known for producing.
He's most known for producing the hit number one podcast across all streaming platforms, The Parking Lot Podcast. He's my boss, Elise's former boss, Elliot's demented mentor, Maggie's early patron of Maggie Prince. Welcome to the podcast.
Like this.
I think that would be a great song.
If I were a country singer?
If I was a country singer, nothing rhymes with singer except dinger and ringer and Jerry Springer.
Maybe you shouldn't say that though. I'm a
You're
country.
In good form for our podcast. I am excited and nervous.
Is there a lot of light here? Should we turn out some of these lights or do you usually go in something this bright?
This is pretty normal. Fuck.
This is already, you're overproducing this.
But if you want to turn off some lights.
Can I just switch headphones and turn off the lights?
I think he's just overstimulated.
We could start off with a little, like, I don't know, palate cleanser, a little conversation between the four of us.
I would
something
love that.
I thought about today and was came up today. Someone said, back in my day, this was like this. My question is, when does it stop becoming your day?
I think it stops becoming your day when the majority of people you see on television and the internet, you don't recognize.
You don't recognize? When you feel like you have to ask somebody else for help in terms of communication or what's cool?
You don't know any
of
the music that's playing.
I think it becomes when you don't know how to use the current technology.
Okay.
Oh.
Because I feel like you can age and it still be your day. But as soon as you give up on like figuring out what's like current... is when you're done.
Great.
Which is why it's past my day.
It's past your day.
Whereas it's still Byron's day, but it's, I can say back in my day.
I was on a Zoom call today, a creative Zoom call, where somebody referenced the show My Name is Earl. And I felt like, it's not your day anymore. You maybe should not be talking about new things if that's your reference point. My Name is Earl.
I've never seen My Name is Earl.
That makes sense. That's a good idea.
Not my day.
I do remember very clearly, actually back in the 90s, thinking there is going to be a time sooner than later where I will not know artists on the radio. And I also sort of expected that sooner than later there wasn't going to be a radio.
Right.
But that I wouldn't know like top 10. And what I find interesting is that took a lot longer than I expected, not because I think I was plugged in any more than anyone else, but because there was such an interesting elongation, I think, of certain artists. Like, you know, anyway, like Taylor Swift has been on the charts for a very long time and, you know, and you know, just a number of people. So it was interesting when I noticed it a few years back when I was like, I don't know anyone on the pop charts now.
That surprises me.
Well,
I
maybe
feel
not
like
any.
You still
I mean,
know.
Not, I know of them, but I wouldn't. If you put on their song, I wouldn't be like, "Oh, that's the new whatever." Lizzo's interesting because Lizzo, in many ways, like so many of the artists now, if you become a brand, which is something that we've talked about as a group before, you know, the Lizzos and the Dua Lipas and
the parking lots
of the world.
Yeah,
then it becomes more than just the voice or the look.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And that those people I am probably a bit more aware of.
So let's set the scene for our listeners at home. We have a live audience. We have Brandon Wong, who is the eldest son of our wonderful guest, Byron Wong. We also have Billy
Wong.
Latimer Wong.
Billy Wong.
He has my name,
is
too.
Is he a hyphenated dog name?
Like Hilliard Wong? Yeah. Sure, if you'd like that.
You're a daytime parent. I'm the nighttime parent. Does that feel right?
It feels uneven. It feels like you're doing more work.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm the one who took him on, but you're the one who has to live with the consequences.
Well, can we say this right now? I mean, it's a big day. You have endeavored to take Billy on.
Yeah,
fully. You've adopted him today.
I signed the paperwork.
Woo!
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's also a big day because you have taken another turn around the sun. The sun.
Yeah.
What's the saying? Turn around the earth.
You've signed the lease of life for one more year.
One more year. How are you feeling, Mr. Wong?
Sorry, am I guaranteed another year?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A lease?
Legally. That's, if you break
or
the year.
Or am I guaranteed another year like a lease?
No,
let's
I'm
check
not
your
guaranteed
life insurance guaranteed policy.
No, but if you break your lease and you don't make it to the end of this year, you owe money. That's how it works.
To you.
Yeah, to me. At least.
More to me.
I can't wait for this edit.
Oh my God.
I can't wait for our listeners to hear this.
Okay.
Skip.
How do you feel?
Skip.
How do I feel?
Yeah.
At this exact moment?
No, just more in general about this upcoming year. What are your feelings?
That's actually a very good question.
Oh, thank you.
No, I mean that. Concerned.
Concerned.
Yeah, I really am.
For our planet, for the business, for humanity.
For the business of the planet. Yeah. Kind of all of the above. Like, I think when you look at where we've come over the last 3 years and you look at what has transpired every year, and the conversations that we're still having and the new ones that are emerging, I'm concerned. And it's not, I don't mean just politically or around COVID and health or, you know, but just there's so many triggering things. And I'm a bit of a news junkie. And, you know, as some of you know, because I send you articles like at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm. All the time. Constantly. Elise and I had a folder called Byron's Story Ideas.
And I muted that folder so I don't get notifications when you add to it.
Because you read a story and you think, we should tell that story. We should be the ones on the ground there.
Well.
You should have been a newsman.
Truly.
So, you know, if you are a news junkie in this day and age, depending on what kind of algorithm you're surfing on.
Yeah.
You, no matter what you believe in or don't believe in, you cannot have anything other than concern going into 2023. And I say that, and you know, all joking aside, but it is interesting that I have a 13-year-old son also listening 5 feet away from me. In many ways, I recognized recently where we are, and I wonder if you'd be interested in hearing this, 13-year-old son, where we are right now is almost exactly the reason I really thought I shouldn't have children.
I feel like that. Not that I'm having children, but sometimes I'm like, if things go like pretty marginally on track the way they are to get worse, I feel like that's irresponsible. So even have multiple, I guess. Maybe one's okay, but.
Are you saying I've been irresponsible?
Yes, I am. I'm saying it's quite reckless and you had no foresight.
No, it actually sort of feels like that sometimes. You know, the flip side of it too is in concern, like real genuine notion of concern. Concern means that you're worried, that you're contemplating. What that should mean is that you're also looking for solutions, right? That you're looking for what is possible. And so if that is very much the second part of the concern is, I think if we're going to have concern in the world, that's not enough, right? Like, it's not like, let's just be worried. And let's then stake our ground and end our conversations and not speak to our neighbors. And that is not what we need to do. It's a very easy place to go. I think concern can be a door to solutions. And I think we should be really open to what those solutions are now. I'm trying to be. So it's odd that I would say I'm concerned, but I'm optimistic about the solutions at the same time.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. Cause it's, yeah, I mean, I think working next to you, I can see you trying to like, the kind of ideas you're having are very much sort of big picture about the future. Very much like based around humanity and telling the stories that matter. Like, I think a lot of some of the solutions you're talking about are in storytelling and making sure the right stories find the right viewers. Does that sound accurate? Or are you talking about like scientific advancements to save our planet?
I'd like to say both. I mean,
oh, good.
You know, I think the stories that we've been involved with, and all of us in this room, you know, all of you have contributed greatly on many different levels to the things that I've been involved with over the last few years. And the one thing I would change, or no, not change, would change. The one thing I'm going to evolve going forward, sort of to answer your question, Kate, is that I believe the process is like, I've always been very process driven, and you've heard me, I think a lot of you have heard me say that before. Like, it's, art is not about the final product, art is about the process of creating the final product. But I'm now really committed as much as I can to a very open process, even for things where maybe the stories are not as impactful as some of the things that we've done before. So, you know, if we're being asked to do something that is a bit more commercial, or a music video or a song or an immersive installation or something, can the process be just as pure if it was something that, you know, for a lot of work that we've done with marginalized communities or under, you know, underserved voices, traditionally there was that idea that, well, it's more authentic or more real if it's serving communities like that. I would love for the process to be authentic no matter what. And I think generally it is, but I want to have more, I want to take a little bit more optimism and hope, and maybe a bit more pride in the process, regardless of what we're doing, because that's what's actually going to change things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I see that.
It can't always be like a notion of, you know, like, activism or heavy storytelling that, you know, like, I think you can change the world shooting a music video, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I think you and I have had those conversations of like the stuff that feels like you're asking people to like take their vegetables. The heavy activism work is not always the stuff that I want to be creating. And I don't think it's always the things that are actually going to reach people's ears. So finding more elevating voices, I think, the right voices.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. And trying to integrate people who, like, maybe instead of, not that I think there's an instead, but in addition to celebrating unique voices as a subject matter, making sure those unique voices are also part of the process around things that might be much more mundane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise there's a bit of an othering that's happening in that too, right? And it's like, oh, well, it's for them, by them. Yeah, but what about all these like really high-end, you know, fashion commercials and super dope, you know, music videos? Oh, well, that's, you know, it feels like that's sort of a domain of a certain kind of hipster look and all of that.
Yeah.
You kind of wanted to get to a point where like, that's not what the draw is the fact that there are other diverse people in it. Like, why can't that just be like a normal thing? Why does it need to be remarkable that there are diverse people in this? You know, it's like the more that you just attune to it, but also I think it's important that it makes sense. Like, this is kind of off topic, but you pointed out in the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, that there's this very obvious push for inclusivity and diversity in a way that like almost didn't make sense. And it's like, it's actually okay to like put things in context and be like, this is something that, you know, this group of people, whether it literally be like elves or whatever, would look the same, and that's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's what Chris was saying, right? It's like you're watching this show and you're like, there's a section of these people who are, you know, hiding from the rest of the world, but there's people from every different race who are part of this group. And you're like, well, if you're hiding from everywhere, how do you all look different? And like, how is it all these different people?
Have you evolved, you know, just to have different skin tones? Because there are,
you know, we have casting agents and we have, you know, dotted lines to sign for Amazon now and stuff like that. But it's like, you can still, I feel like there's still room for those, you know, have everybody included, but you just kind of have, you know, maybe think a little bit harder and wrap it into the story a little bit more or whatever. Yeah, it would
but
be,
then
right?
When we watch a sitcom, we don't have to have the token Asian friend. They could just be that person's friend, and the fact that they're a different race does not need to be a part of their character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I as the token Asian friend in this podcast, I'm not sure if I agree. I watched Lord of the Rings almost, and you're Elliot, your assertion and sort of initial review and feedback to me was in my head the whole time. And
influencer. What was that for our listeners who don't know?
Well, let's put this in context. When my partner Lindsay told me that they had spent $50 million per episode, I turned to her in the car, and we were in Vancouver, and I said, I'm sorry, you're wrong. There is no way that is possible. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, I really think I heard that on the radio. And I'm like, no, you have to understand. Like, you know, I'm like
mansplaining
like budgets. I'm like, it's just, it's impossible. And so we're laughing. I'm Googling and I'm like, dear God, it was like a $450 million US budget.
Yeah, it's crazy.
For, you know, for the episodes. And you're like, so, you know, you calculate it, it's like $20,000 per second. And so then I was like, I asked Elliot, because I value his opinion, and I asked a number of people. And the resounding thing was, yeah, it's okay.
That's fine.
And I think for $50 million per episode, $20,000 per second, I want to see something that's far cooler, more amazing, sexier, crazier than the birth of my child in a Ferrari coming out of the womb. Like, what in the literal hell is, I want to be like blown away. And you were like, yeah, it's okay. And I'm like, no, this is not fair. Like, we are so spoiled for choice now and for technology that, and I'm not, it's not a criticism of you, or, but everyone said the same thing. Yeah, it's okay. How do you spend a $500 million on something that's okay?
Yeah.
Now, I will say I watched it. I haven't finished it all, but I think I'm like 8 or 9 episodes in, which I think is most of it.
Yeah.
How is it?
I actually liked it. I did. Because I have no expectation of it. I think people who are more into it than I am in any way. But I agree with you. I was constantly like, say what? Now, I didn't think it was as diverse as people were making it out to be.
No, but then people are also complaining, like people complaining on both sides, obviously, saying it's not enough or it's too much or whatever. There's like, there's too many black hobbits, or people are saying, you're like,
I mean, that, yeah.
I'm like, there's one.
It's like, too many.
Yeah. There's a black hobbit?
Yeah.
I guess that's episode 9.
Yeah.
Really? Is there a black hobbit?
Yeah, he's like the main
Byron
main
doesn't
hobbit.
See color, actually.
Isn't he an elf?
He's an elf.
No, They're all they're not hobbits, but they're like the small people.
Oh, that live in the village?
Oh, yeah.
Boy. Oh, yeah.
He's got like the long, crazy gray hair.
Are you confusing hobbits and elves?
No. Oh, no,
but are you confusing black people and white people? Yeah.
This episode is going to be like 6 minutes. You're going to just have to cut out everything. It's not a matter of like cutting out what goes. It's like, let's just see what can stay.
You know whose fault this is? Elise. She is the one who brought up.
I did.
L-O-T-R.
I'm sorry.
Loader.
It doesn't even have rewatchability. So that's why I just find the show shocking.
I agree with that. You know, like, I think for some of it, it is actually like, it was abysmal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But some of it, I thought actually was quite moving. I do find the elf and his love interest to be super compelling.
Kate?
Yeah. Love interest?
Thoughts?
I agree. Honestly,
did you watch it?
No,
you're lying. Okay. Let's move on from
Lord of the Rings.
Rings of Power.
I'm so sorry.
You would totally dig.
Do
the
you
lead
think
guy.
I would?
Did you ever finish House of the Dragon?
Is he little?
No, like he's an elf. Elves are tall.
Actually, that is true. Legolas. Was my, like,
yeah,
childhood sexual awakening.
That's so weird.
Wow. Sure.
Okay. Mine was Ray Romano and Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah, the other the other night.
So much.
I was gonna say that does add up.
Oh wow. Oh wow.
And now
three nights ago.
Yeah. Now she's dating him.
Now young Ray.
Hey everyone.
Ma. Yeah.
Okay, this is literally question one for me. So you wear a lot of hats.
Literally?
Yeah. Literally.
We were thinking about getting you a toque for your birthday.
Oh, that would have been great.
We weren't.
But you got me donuts instead, yeah, and instead. I appreciate it. And you've had one.
Father, co-dog owner, creative director.
Hold on. That second part. Okay.
Teacher, music producer.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume your proudest title is that of being PKL's producer, Parking Lot's producer.
Absolutely.
I want to give the audience gravestone. Some context. What is
if you made it this far?
Yeah, what's this process been like for you? How did you first get to know us? How did this happen? How are we sitting here today?
How could you do this? How could you let this happen?
Can you take us through the story?
Why would you do this?
And which one of us is your favorite?
Maggie.
Oh, that's easy.
Other than Billy. Yeah.
No, Maggie, for sure.
Yeah. She's everyone's favorite. Yeah. We miss you.
Are you really asking? Do you really want to know?
I really want to know. But I want you to start at the beginning. I want you to spin the story.
My recollection is that the idea was kind of like, I'm not sure how long the three of you or the four of you had the idea, but
years.
It came to me through you.
Yeah.
Elise, you were talking about it and careful.
Hit myself in the tooth with my microphone.
Elise was working with you at that time.
She was.
And you were not.
And I was not.
And Kate was not. And Elliot was hanging around.
Yeah, sure.
And I thought, these two fine young people I like conversing with. And so I suspect when they converse with each other and with a guest, it might be quite interesting. And then they said, well, come meet. Well, actually, you're asking about the podcast, not about how we met.
Well, no, I want all of it.
It kind of goes together.
I mean, a lot of it's a blur.
You started working with Maggie. Too.
That's right. So Maggie was.
I remember there was a point where Elise and I were becoming friends, and she had this sort of mysterious boss figure. She was meeting the Obamas. He was running around on the phone a lot, and I'm like, who is this guy?
And why would you put up with this?
And why did you do this?
And then Maggie met you.
Yeah.
And then everyone in my life was just talking about this Byron Wong.
Even your parents.
People who didn't know you.
Yeah. Why? I mean, look, how it started and why it came to be is not real, has very little to do with me.
It has quite a bit to do with you.
Yeah, I would disagree.
Well, I encouraged it. I encouraged it honestly because I found each of you individually really quite unique, which sounds like a bit of a cop out, but I mean that. And so, this, you know, look, we have a lot of inside jokes and I'm sure we're going to have to cut most of them out here because there's a lot of inside humor, but I was very compelled by Elise and just her just sort of knowledge of random stuff. I meet Elliot and he's clearly just got this depth of interest in so many things and a real genuine desire to explore it. Then you meet Maggie, who is apparently one of Elliot's closest friends from age four bathtub era. And you go, huh? They're so opposite seemingly on the outside, because here's tall Elliot, and the first time I met it you were coming out, there was a whole group of actors and you were doing Second City and all of that, and then I meet Maggie, and who is just like this really even seemingly even
not actually
well no no she is really but this really even very her energy is very exact.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that fascinating. I'm like, and of course she's a phenomenal illustrator. We started working together on a few things. So I'm like, so as you're kind of talking, Elise is telling me how we're thinking about doing this podcast, and maybe we'll, we're calling it Parking Lot, and we're going to do it in all these. And I said, mm-hmm. Well, you should actually do it in parking lots.
Yeah.
In a car, because cars are really great acoustics and all this. So I then got really excited about how the context of this could be really unique. And then I met Kate. And of course, I'd heard about K-
Kate the academic.
Yeah, there's a fourth
Kate,
one.
Kate the intellectual. Kate
That's the such fucking bullshit.
Master's in documentary.
Oh my
literature.
God.
And so, you know, and so I'm like, wow, this could be really amazing. And so the first time Kate and I met, you and I met, was yes. when you were recording.
Yeah, yeah you came
you
to
were our
recording.
Guest.
And so what for me, I mean, all I did really was I individually, minus probably Kate and Maggie, but I encouraged it because I thought, well, this is interesting. I think I bought that recorder specifically
you
for you to say, hey, use this and here's the microphones and like come into this space and do this. But what I didn't expect, honestly, was I didn't expect you to.
How nice I would be.
You were remarkable in that kind of like, I've like in that the fear in your eyes kind of look
yeah.
that when we met.
Yeah.
I didn't expect you to be able to sustain it this long. And I think
nobody did.
No, but I think it speaks to exactly why I was interested in supporting this in any way is because most people, regardless of their listenership, cannot make it to this many episodes, this much time, this kind of consistency. And that consistency is what's going to get us through. Going back to like what we're sort of talking about in general, you know, what's 23 about consistency, a little be more consistent. Actually, like saying, we're going to do this. We're going to try. It's not always going to be easy. People are going to fall off. People are going to jump back on. That's really remarkable. And that's why I like, you know, that's why I saw that. I felt I saw that in you, but you just never know. And here you are.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? 100 and what?
This will be a 105.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so.
That's amazing. It's like I haven't done 105 anything in my life.
How many of those have you listened to?
107.
Yeah. No, you haven't.
You listened to the unreleased ones.
Mm-hmm. Those early. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you were there for an unreleased one.
Yeah. This is our second time doing a Byron Wong interview.
It was the day Chadwick Boseman died.
I can't believe
it
was it.
I can't believe you associate those 2 days.
We were talking about that.
No. It is interesting. I mean, I know why that means something to you on so many levels, but it actually is a big deal. And I think for a lot of people, this is completely not what you're talking about, but Black Panther, he is an actor, his presence on screen. I saw directly in some people I love dearly. It almost was to them the same feeling as when Obama became president. Almost. I really mean that.
Watching like, him in Black Panther?
Just that Black Panther just existed. Just the concept, just the true wealth of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a moment.
It was really, and so when he died, I think there was a sense of someone who really helped represent some of the best possibilities.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's
that was a strange historical recollection, I think. Yeah, but you've done it.
We've done it, and I mean, thanks to you. I remember having early meetings that you'd be like, "Let's pull the team and figure out what's going on." And it's just anyway. This leads me into my next question, which is more about your like innate. I don't know what it is, but your willingness to take a chance on someone and give them the benefit of the doubt and really like bestow upon them your time and energy. And it feels kind of like mentorship. And it also feels kind of like a fairy grandfather, godfather, you know what I'm trying to say? Where does that come from? Why do you do it? Because you do it across with so many people, you pick them up
in different.
You take a chance on them, and you give them what they need to succeed.
Well, that's incredibly kind.
It's just true.
Well, I don't really see it that way. And this has sort of come up a fair amount for a number of reasons over the last little while. Mostly because I've been reconciling a lot of my own failures lately, which I think like a lot of us, we romanticize them a bit. I don't know if any of you do in that way, but it's like, oh, that could have gone. Oh, and what? And that happened. And, you know, this tidal wave came in the middle of me rowing through, you know, the shores of life. And like, what the hell?
I don't do that.
That's a direct quote from me.
Yeah.
In reference to Billy.
The shores of life.
I don't, yeah. Please cut that out. But no, that's kind of you because I didn't know I did that.
Absolutely.
No, but I'm realizing now more because I've had to do a lot of self-examination over the last little bit. And so I've recognized that, but I think what I've been trying to do is recognize, like, to your point, why?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like what we were talking about. That's also what I do. So forgive me if this is not necessary, but I always find through lines in things. You know that? So this goes back to like, so how do I feel about this year? Well, same way, I guess it's the same thing of how I feel about engaging people. I'm concerned.
Right.
And I have a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. And so when I meet new people, maybe less so now these days, I really hope so. I mean, you know, after all these decades, but when I used to meet people when I was much younger, I was generally afraid because of the way I grew up and some of the things that had happened along the way. I didn't have the normal sort of confidence, or confidence isn't the right word. I think a lot of kids maybe don't have confidence, but maybe a genuine sort of sense of security of who I was or where I was. Because, you know, I grew up in a time and in a neighborhood and in a town where I kind of stuck out because I didn't really look like everyone else at the time. And it's a bit of an old narrative for me, but it is true. And so I think I approached people for a very long time of how can I firm up something like not a friendship, but at least how can I make it so they won't hurt me?
Right. Cause you were like physically beaten up as a kid.
Yeah.
To very like extreme levels.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, sure. At times, and a couple of things happened, and when I was a bit older after we moved, and that, you know, I think you look back and go, oh, that's really affected me, and it affects your how you trust and such. And I actively said to myself, I do remember this. I had to say this to myself when I was about 13, maybe a little bit younger. I'm either going to do something with this, or I'm going to hurt myself or other people. And I thought, well, that doesn't sound right. That's not the way I was raised. That's not what I want. You know, I believed in the good side of the force, you know? And so to answer your question better, okay, like I think when engaging new people or engaging people in general, I think I just want to learn about people. I'm really interested in the human condition. I'm really interested in where people come from. I'm genuinely taken by human stories. And I think I'd like to say I approach people the way I'd want to be approached. I don't think that's entirely true. I think at times I approach people maybe entirely the wrong way. I think sometimes I can be off-putting because I can be too pleasant. I can be off-putting because I'm too harsh.
Off-putting because you're too pleasant?
That's a real thing. Not real thing. You specifically, but when meet someone who's like so eager, you're like, okay, well, kind of like a golden retriever human.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't think
that's not your vibe.
No, I don't think it is, but I was told I wasn't going to do very well in Los Angeles by once because I was too nice. And that's not, that's fine. That's neither a compliment nor whatever, a criticism in my opinion. But I mentioned that because in sort of the exploration of like why and how I engage, I've realized it is in genuine pursuit. God, I actually hadn't really thought about this. I'm sort of saying this in real time. So if this sounds really dumb, you're going to have to really just,
I'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, you have to cut it all out.
Okay.
Or else you're fired.
Perfect.
I think I really believe that if we just try all a little bit harder in any way, just with the first hello, just to take a moment to see what might help, that this might all survive. That's actually, yeah, I actually have such, in some ways, because I was supposed to be twins. I don't know if I ever told you that, but I was supposed to be twins.
And no, I didn't know that.
And I wasn't. That I think the duality in me is I have such fear, such concern, such just, I'm so dismissive about the world. And then the other part of me is absolutely not. We are going to win this. We are not only going to win this, we're going to win this together. That's that. And that comes from, and so that's where the engagement, which you kindly mentioned, which I think it is really kind, but that's just really an effect of that duality.
Of your like, so you just have this like enduring hope for humankind that comes through in like generosity? Like if I'm kind and generous to everyone, then that's going to be like the solution.
Elise laughed suddenly, like it was like a.
Well, because I'm saying that like I'm incredulous, but I do kind of think that maybe you're correct, because I remember when I met you, I was like working at a coffee shop, and Elise was like, my boss is going to give us gear and a studio space to do this random podcast. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, what is this guy's intention? Like, does he want to monetize this?
I'm going to need to you, all of you, during the podcast.
I was so distrustful of the whole thing. And then you were like asking questions about me, wanting to know my history and career. And I was like, what, do you not think I'm like qualified? I was just so on the defensive. And
were you?
Yeah.
And yeah. Because I mean, when you tell this story to another person, they're like, that sounds absolutely nuts. Like, what does anybody get out of giving you guys gear and a space to record? Like, you must want something from us.
I just didn't trust it for a while. And then I think realizing that someone is actually just being like having faith in someone else, like that is a perspective shift for the person who's like witnessing it. Mm-hmm. So anytime that you're like, putting that out into the world, I do think that changes someone's like sphere of thinking, probably like in a big way.
Absolutely.
So I do think you're right that like that's maybe the answer too.
I wasn't laughing at that concept. I just like the idea that like you said, so if I, like me specifically, am nice to everybody, then there's hope for humanity.
Just Byron.
No, I think she meant just you.
Oh, just me. Like,
so if Kate can do this, I swear to God.
I have a pretty big social network. I don't know if you heard about my New Year's Eve party.
Generosity is it's a word I'm not really comfortable with, and it's just a word, but I think it's often sort of like the connotation is like give, and you're giving money or you're giving, there's a something. I don't have enough money really to give, in the way that are meaningful. So I've never really understood that, you know, if that word has ever been applied to anything I've done. So I thank you for it, but if there's a notion of generosity, if it's like, it's kind of one way, like, oh, he's just so giving. I'm very much taking. Like, but maybe what I'm taking is like my expectations, what I want back are really quite simple. I didn't like using parking lot as an example. Like, sure. Like you guys have this idea. You need space, you need gear, you need a little bit of encouragement. Uh-huh. Like, that's it. Like to me, like I just look at that, I go, right. That's it. Like that, like what could come of this if these four people and their guests are willing to actually participate, consistently, mm-hmm. learn. Like, even if this podcast never has more than 100 listeners per episode, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It all it needs is the four of you listening to each other, because that, again, through lines, sorry, but that's the problem. We don't have enough conversation. Now, I know podcasts are very popular with people, but they're often very popular in this kind of like
so like when this happened, what happened when you did this and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, you know, what happened was this. And it's like, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, but, and then they go, well, why did that happen? Well, I was feeling this way. And you're like, yeah, but feelings are like tides, right? Like they're just going to ebb and flow as they do. But what is the core value? And core values can change in a good way. Mm-hmm. They can also diminish too.
Mine certainly have.
Diminished?
Diminished.
Absolutely. Well, that comes with adopting a dog.
Yeah.
On my birthday.
Big day.
But it's the idea that I think if, going back to a couple of things. So generosity. When I engage someone, it's because I want to learn about them. Hmm. Because in many ways, I've learned about myself through working with and speaking to other people. Because I think for a very long time, and maybe even now, I'm not that comfortable with myself.
So is I don't that think true?
I would not have guessed
that.
But it's not. It is that true? Yes. Is it true? No. Like it depends on.
Depends on the day.
Yeah. Well, you know that. Like the context of things, right? So, like when you can. I'm not very good, really, at many many things. Like, and I've said this a few times. Like, I'm not great at many things, but I'm really genuinely good at getting, I don't want to say getting to know someone, that sounds weird, but getting an understanding of something quickly. And it's not to say that I'm always right about it. Many times I'm not right. You can't really be right about feelings. You can just sort of gain feelings about something. And if I can sense a feeling, like going back to even like when you and I met, Kate, if I can sense that there's something here and I start
good energy.
Well, I use that term a lot. I know that's why you're making fun of me. But yeah. But also a healthy dose of uneven energy. That's okay. More interesting to me, right? It's kind of like, you know, like I used to produce a lot of music and I never really gravitated ever to working with singers.
Right.
I worked with vocalists. I worked with people who did interesting things with their voice. Now, hopefully they were mostly on pitch as well, but they were never singers. Like, you know, like I'm singing now. Because there's something really wonderful in the true humanity of that unevenness of just presenting your voice with a lyric in a tone. You feel the trying. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm interested in.
So you sensed my uneven energy.
Absolutely. I have with all of you.
I was going to say, I think we are the perfect group of people with very uneven energy. But truly, like, even, hi, Maggie, including Maggie in that. Like, you do describe her as having a very even energy when you meet her. But then when you get to know her, there's such layers to it. And it's weird because it's such layers at almost like a small volume of energy. Mm. She's so complex, but not in a way that's loud and in your face. Like you meet somebody who's just extroverted and that's the only layer to them. It's like this small layered thing. And I think we all have that in different ways and where we're not one thing. And obviously not every single person is one thing, but some people are more so, or some people are willing to show you what they are off the bat.
Yeah.
And I don't think we are those kinds of people that show you everything in one go.
You're a closed book, that's for sure.
Me? Yeah. You can't get anything out of me.
I don't know what you're thinking ever.
Ever.
But I mean, not to belabor this point, but just like if I were to be in your situation and someone pitched me a podcast, I'd be like, that's a very saturated market. You don't seem to have like a very strong thesis. What are you going to add to that conversation?
And you're not very well known. Like, how are you going to find new people?
Who are you to start talking? And those were never the questions you had. It was just this sort of like faith and trust and understanding that the stakes were low. So you could be, I don't know. It's a way of looking at the world that I think I'm trying to learn from you, which I don't think I've told you. So no, thank you.
Well, also, thank you for being my mentor.
Oh boy.
And the outlook.
Thank you. Thank you as well. But truly, like, generosity though, I think is also exhausting because generosity is energy and time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you give a lot of that to
everyone.
To everyone that you think you have, I don't want to say hope for, but that you just, you know, you just said that you can see that there's something worth putting time and energy into. But it's hard when I'm sure you don't get that back immediately.
Maybe, you know, ROI is a funny thing, right?
Return on investment.
What did Elise say?
I said record of employment, but then that's ROE. Record of employment.
Employment.
Return on investment, yes.
I don't think I keep track in the normal ways of that. And not always to like the benevolence of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Often, sometimes a bit to the detriment of the situation, because some people do want to actually have a more exact currency, if you will,
mm-hmm.
in exchange. And so I'm realizing that too, and which goes back again to kind of go back to that, why I want that more of that transparency in the process.
Yeah.
Because some people just want to get paid for their time.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because actually I know what that means now. And some people want to be just congratulated for the time. They don't really care about the money, but they really want to be recognized. They want to make sure they have a voice. They want to make sure that they're heard. And some people don't know, but they're driven to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be a lot of people in my world.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes they kind of, I'm sometimes in a position where I'm being asked to almost affirm or confirm, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Validate. Thank you. That's a great way of putting it. In a way that, like, well, you know, he's kind of done a few things and he's sort of validating what I'm saying. And you know, you sort of brought it up earlier. That is a powerful thing. I realize that. But I don't try to do it in a way that puts people in a position to try to jump farther than they can or run faster than they can or whatever analogy we want to make. I really do try to validate and affirm in as authentic way as I can for what I see and what I know. And why I mention that is that, yeah. You know, it's not really about encouragement. It's not even really about, it's not really about anything. Like, it's kind of hard to say what that currency is, but at least for me, I'm not sure I have so many words for it. It's kind of like music. Like, it's either there or it's not.
Mm.
But I know I keep saying this and we've all said this. I have extreme hope for how things can turn out. And I get really frustrated. And all of you have seen that in various things. Like, I try really hard and I'm really hard on myself. And therefore I'm sometimes hard on the people around me, but I do it not, and I don't say this to ever excuse myself for these things, but I do it because I really believe if we can stay on board, we can really accomplish something. And that notion of accomplishment, the learning of how to accomplish individually, mm-hmm. and as a group,
mm-hmm.
is incredibly powerful. There's nothing more powerful than when why is it like sports teams, you know, you go and you see 60,000 people are watching, you know, like the World Cup or whatever. And people are just like thrilled when they're singing the same song or they're doing the wave or doing mm-hmm. whatever. It's because they're, I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of studies around this, either psychologically or whatever, but there is immediate energy in that. And so if we know that and we can feel that, why isn't there immediate energy between what you and I can share, or the three of you can share, or the four of you, or what we can share on a moment walking down the street, or how we speak to our taxi driver or someone at a restaurant or someone who might just need a hand for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. It's but it, God, I, even when I say it, I don't know. I don't. I think you need to edit all of that out.
Well, actually. The answer is vulnerability. In a group, you're not an individual. You're part of a group, but in that one-on-one interaction, there's just one other person observing you. It's almost like there's a dynamic between two people. But when you're in a stadium going, wah-la-la, you're just a part of something that exists, whether you're there or not. It's not about you.
That's a good point.
So you're saying that energy comes from like lack of vulnerability, like being part of the herd?
Yeah, like being almost getting to let go of whatever would hold you back.
Right.
If it was just you and one other person.
I see what you're saying.
Well, let me ask you something. In this little configuration we have here, Elliot and Billy, not included, we have three only children here.
Not anymore.
That's true. I'm sorry. But you know what? In fairness, you grew up as an only child. That's a whole thing. That's amazing. That is amazing.
You should have said what?
What are you talking about?
Huh?
The choices that I think that we make as only children, with any of the hurdles and the options that we were given as children, almost regardless of our own choices. And what I mean by that is some people have larger homes or access to vehicles or video games or money or education or two parents or multiple parents or whatever. Those
multiple parents.
Yeah.
They're like step parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, multiple guardians. But we as children, we have no say in that. It's just sort of circumstantial, right? The other side of it is that we also recognize that we may or may not need to fight the same way as maybe Elliot did having a sibling. You know, or that I see with my kids, like there's a little bit that competition. And why I bring this up is that you said vulnerability, and I think vulnerability is a really key word, as is another word that I heard earlier over lunch, which was curation. If we grow up in a situation, and I'm saying this, you know, I realize there are many, many families where siblings genuinely do not get along and they generally hurt, you know, one another or have been hurt and all of that. And that breaks my heart, because I think seeing this now with my children, to be able to grow up and know that even you could say anything, you could smack each other in the groin as many times, but you're ultimately still going to have each other's backs because you grew up in the same way. I'm in awe of that. I think that's something I've always really wanted.
Yeah.
Because of the way I grew up and a lot of the time where I was really alone or felt alone, I was vulnerable and vulnerable in a number of ways. And so what I've been trying to do, I think, is in many ways, not only, if you will, collect or curate my own vulnerabilities around this and expose them and explore them through the work I do, but expose them and explore them through and with other people who also may or may not recognize their own vulnerabilities. So it's not even their own unevenness. That's maybe it's vulnerabilities. I like that word. And so the curation of now the people to help build that up, to which now I get a little bit heady and I say, well, isn't that all of us? Like that is all of us. We are all vulnerable. We are all scared. We are all arrogant. We are all everything. We are humans. How can we then find ways to continue to communicate so that we can at least know that maybe if there's just a little bit more, going back to that notion of generosity, if we can just be a little bit more generous with our emotions, our time, even 5 seconds more, that we might just affirm someone enough to actually be vulnerable, not strong. We're already strong just by getting up every day and trying to be resilient. Affirm them enough that they're allowed to be vulnerable, and therefore you can, and therefore we might actually take down the facade just for a moment and learn something about each other.
Well, like what you said about being comfortable with yourself is like vulnerability is letting somebody see you for who you are, and you are okay with who that person is. It's like the other person will probably more times than none accept you for exactly who you are, but you don't like who you are. So being vulnerable and letting somebody see who you are is like, that's my biggest fear. That's like the biggest hurdle I've had living with Elliot this year is like, I don't get to pick and choose now what part of me Elliot sees, even though I am so already vulnerable with him. I have no choice. This is just, he has to go through it now. I'm sorry. Also, you've been doing great though.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then it's like, yeah, yeah. But then that's how you, at the end of the day, can be generous and comfortable with yourself and figure out how to also claim your own energy for your own. Because at the end of the day, I find myself sometimes being like, I'm too tired to go and see this person. And it's not because I don't want to. It's because I know I can't show up for them in the way that they want me to. I don't have the energy to do that. And it's okay to have that conversation.
That's really well put. Yeah.
I'm a very uncomfortable being vulnerable, as you know.
And
yeah.
Why is that?
That's a conversation for another day.
Not really. You literally made me go through the history of why.
Yeah, but you're the guest on this podcast. Okay. Let's talk about.
Do you have anything to weigh in, Elliot?
In terms of vulnerability?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we move on.
I'm curious about that as well with you.
Well, as someone who, I don't know, I usually am the person to listen first, say something second. And I'm very shy most of the time. But in terms of like, I don't know, it's everybody has their own stuff. Everyone's got their own reasons to be vulnerable and nothing is really overweighing anybody else's problems or whatever it would be. And I think it's just because they're not your problems, you look at somebody else, be like, well, I don't understand why you're ashamed of that or why you wouldn't bring that forward or whatever it would be. And you're kind of always kind of, I don't know, surprised at somebody's reaction to you putting something forward and, you know, getting accepted or not accepted, but in my experience, it's been mostly acceptance of being like, you know what? They've probably gone through that same thing as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're struggling with it too, but it's always easier for someone else to say to them, you know what? I see this and this in you that you don't see. Yeah. And that is usually, you know, the hardest thing to see in yourself to whatever it is that you're faced against or battling internally. So I don't know. Just remembering that. Just remembering that everybody's not perfect. You're not perfect. You don't need to know all the answers right away. Like, I have a horrible tendency of comparing myself with other people. And like, at this age, they were doing this and whatever it would be. But everybody's different. And everyone's got to get to wherever they're going at the pace that they need to get there. So,
amen.
Why rush the journey? Enjoy the process, not the destination, like we were saying earlier.
Mm-hmm. You've been very vulnerable on this podcast.
You have been.
Yeah.
I think you set the tone for vulnerability and I have yet to match it. So
I mean,
thank you.
If not here, where? Right.
Whoa. If not now, when? If not here, where?
Yeah.
Not me, who?
Yeah, Byron, that is a great line.
Have you considered starting a cult?
I thought I had.
Elliot has.
Yeah.
I've joined Elliot's.
I truly think you could monetize this outlook on life. Maybe we could
like a subscription
talk about after off pod.
Have you
heard about pyramid schemes?
MLMs?
Wongamid. Well, first of all, I think the
are you going to give this a serious answer?
No, but
I appreciate that.
Well, first of all, the subscription
first
model.
First of all, the subscription model is a huge flawed.
The tax rebates. Yeah.
And we'd have to set up a company in the Bahamas.
This would all be under Billy's name.
Yeah. Billy Latimer Wong. You know, the idea of leadership in all of this. I'm neither comfortable nor uncomfortable with it, but I think if you were to ask me even a few years ago, I'd say like, I'm really uncomfortable with the notion of leadership.
But don't you think leadership's just the one with the vision?
No.
Why not?
Just because you have the vision doesn't mean you're good at executing it. And I think it takes a true leader understands that like the process, as Elliot just said, is just as important as the end result, and how to lead people towards that, and also like afford people their own chunk of it, not just be like, this is my thing and you need to do this for me. It's like, without you, this thing we're all working towards doesn't happen.
But what do you, you can't lead anyone without a vision.
Yeah, but I don't think every person who has a vision is a leader.
Yeah, you can I agree with that. You can focus someone else's vision.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. The
maybe more in a cult sense is where I was going.
Well, the problem with leadership and the problem with leading a cult is that to do it, you have to be like a little bit untouchable. And, you know, there are probably people in my life who would say that's not entirely true, but certainly in the last while, long while, I've really purposefully and openly examined my own flaws and my own, maybe not flaws, whatever, that's my own deficits, right? Like, and a deficit can come or go, again, depending on context. But I think the cult of personality and the personality of cults is, means you can't, you're not supposed to examine that. There's a bit of, you're right. Like, you know, there's a, that all powerful leader kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really not interested in that. Certainly for myself, but maybe you can, maybe we can start a cult. You can lead it.
Okay, great. I'll take your vision.
That sounds good. Like Elliot, you know, like we've had a lot of talks about acting and storytelling and creative and all of that. And there's like, we're living in a time now where, we live in a time where, again, there's no conversation. Everyone's supposed to look perfect. Filters make, you know, no one has attention span, mm-hmm. any attention span and all that. And so when we talk about you being creative, the things that you're interested in, do you feel that there is for you, you know, you describe yourself as shy. Like, is the deficit a sense of vision? I don't think so at all. Not at least from what I know of you. Is it a sense of understanding of things? I don't think so. Is it a sense of leadership? Whatever that means. Is it a sense of engagement? Is it because you're also living in a really competitive world? Like, I think this is one of the most incredible times ever to create, mm-hmm. because the tools are all there.
What's the,
but I think it's also one of the hardest times ever to create because it's not clear as to what is good anymore. Yeah,
like there's so much of everything, right? And at least for me, it's kind of, and you know, it's different now because we've done 100 and something episodes, but I'm trying to focus now on the things. If I watch something and you get like a certain feeling inside and it kind of scares you a little bit, means like I probably have to do something in that area or something like that, because it's making me feel kind of freaked out. And the idea of me doing that scares the shit out of me. So I have to start doing more things that scare the shit out of me. And whether it's just like, I don't know, the way for me to put my vision out there, or to me to make content to put out for someone else. And then I only look at it in the way that I would like to see stuff. We're like, my greatest hope for parking lot stuff is that if someone, I don't know, reads the first sentence of one of our things in our newsletter and it makes them smile, they have one extra smile that day or whatever it would be.
You're like a dentist.
Something
so
stupid.
Nice.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's just like, but even if someone laughs 15 times while listening to this or comes away with an idea that they didn't have going into it, then I feel like we've succeeded.
Absolutely.
In some way. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just, there is so much stuff out there and there are so many people doing everything, but it's just remembering that you're allowed to just kind of not take yourself so seriously all the time and just like be silly, but don't be annoying. But like, you know, just like let your freak flag fly if you need to, and just kind of get what is in your head out there. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. You always have next time. It'll always be better the next time you do it. Like all that kind of stuff.
I like that. Like, you know, the idea, like I say this a lot, I don't take what I do very seriously, but I take how I do it really seriously.
Yeah.
Right? Because like, I would be just as happy working in a restaurant or driving a taxi. Mm-hmm. I really, you know, and people are like, no, you wouldn't. I'm like, well, maybe I wouldn't. I don't know. But I think I would, because I actually really enjoyed that when I worked in restaurants, because to what you're saying, like, there's, it's a microcosm of try again, perfection, not perfection, very much imperfection. Like, mm-hmm. And so every time you approach a table, take an order, you can really screw it up.
Yeah.
There's a million things that could go wrong, and how you solve that and deal with that. I really loved that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I still do.
Yeah.
You have that many opportunities to succeed in that one evening, right? You're like, yeah. Maybe the first table didn't do well. Now I know for this next one or whatever. Right? And it just keeps going and going day in, day out.
Can we call this part one of two? Will you come back and talk to us another day?
In a year?
No, like sooner rather than later.
Sure.
Because we're on question three of my questions for you.
How many questions did you put?
I have three pages of questions.
And we're in question three of the first page?
Yeah.
Well, that seemed a little ambitious of you.
I forgot how much you talk.
For our audience, there's a big eye roll there.
Wow. What's your next question? I just want to know.
Speak and prepare.
It's about your creative process.
Oh, God. Yeah. Let's definitely take a break.
Part four.
Yeah.
But
let's do some quick cues. You provide the A's. This is our Toronto section. We end our interviews by asking about favorite spots in Toronto. What is your favorite place to listen to live music? These can be one word answers.
Massey Hall.
Best place to let your children run around.
Home.
That's a good answer. What is the address? Just kidding. They're EastEnders now, baby. You'll never find them. Best restaurant.
Oof. So many. Oh my God.
You're allowed to say the Keg.
There is this really great restaurant in the East End that I went to called Ascari, which is just around Queen and Pape, I think.
What kind of food is that?
It's mostly Italian, I guess, but it was just somewhere I met one of my colleagues for a meeting, and we were both floored by it.
What's your favorite bookstore?
BMV.
I set you up so you could say that. Yeah. The one on Bloor?
Yeah.
At Brunswick?
It is, yeah.
What do you buy from there?
Everything. Everything that B and M and V stands for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm in. Mm-hmm. But they need to add like random toys. So yeah. It like needs to be BMVRT.
It needs to be BMVF for Funko Pop.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Have so yeah. They have those.
I know.
Yeah.
What I'm saying, they should be called BMVF.
Oh, I thought you said they needed more of that stuff.
No.
So like, yeah. They've got so much of that stuff.
I haven't been there in
so
a long time.
So many Funko Pops.
Yeah. Makes me want to go to BMV tonight. They used to be open to midnight.
I remember that because I used to live at Howland. I used to go at like 11 p.m.
Greatest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
HMV used to be open till midnight every day.
Things that end in M and V.
When I was
the
sad,
DMV,
I would go
not open
though
till midnight.
Yeah.
A hidden gem in Toronto.
Besides parking lot?
Yeah. Whoa. That is a nice plug. Thank you.
There's so many hidden gems in the city. You know the hidden gem in this city that I think is in plain sight?
What?
That no one goes to?
Sugar Beach.
Or not enough people go to?
Mm.
The island. Toronto Island.
Oh, a lot of people go there. You're just not going with them.
I mean, I know a lot of people go, but for what it is and what it offers, I'm surprised that
it's a magical spot.
How few people actually go.
No, it's true. That's one of my favorite things to do in Toronto.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Eat a salami sandwich on Ward's Island.
What's your dream Sunday morning activity?
Oh, that's a really nice question.
Thank you.
I kind of live it.
What is it?
I get up. I'm usually the first one up. Kids filter in. I'm usually like reading something or making music or I'm just playing and they kind of hang out with me. And Lynn and Lindsay used to teach Sunday mornings and we'd all just kind of, I don't know.
And be together?
Yeah, whether it was at the Esplanade or in the East End.
Byron Wong, Your family is gathered to celebrate you. We have taken up too much of your time already. I want to thank you so much for being on our podcast. Let's call this part one of two.
I that would be fun. Thank you. Let's do it again soon.
All right.
Very soon.
Thank you all for stopping by.
Rest in peace, Ginger.
Brandon's here. Welcome to the tree.